Pendis. My name is Jared. I'm the family pastor here at Wildwood, and I'm very glad to have the opportunity to speak with you this morning. It's been a few weeks since I've been in the pulpit. I trust that you guys enjoyed Dr. Torgerson at the beginning of July. I know he enjoyed being here and being with all of you and getting the opportunity to go with Suk to the John Deere Classic and enjoy the finest golf course in the Quad Cities. We also took him to Miss Mamie, so I'm not sure he enjoyed the finest dining in the Quad Cities, but, you know, you can't get it all. And then it was a joy and a pleasure of mine to have Pastor Scott back with us last week. I hope you guys enjoyed the sesquicentennial celebration, if you're able to be a part of it. And we are working on getting some of those videos that we showed last week during the service and afterwards at the lunch online so you guys can play those again, or if you miss them, you can catch those and some very, very powerful moments there. This morning, I want to share with you about a young man who desired to get a job, which is a good thing for any young man to desire. And so he began the process of filling out job applications and put together a nice resume. And one of the places that he applied was a movie theater. And he was really, really jazzed about the idea of working at a movie theater because free popcorn, free movies. What more could a young man else want out of a job? And so he actually got a call back from this movie theater, so he went in one day for a job interview. And he sat down across from the manager, who began to ask him some questions. And one of the questions that the manager asked him was, "What would you do in case of a fire?" And the young man began to think. And as he was thinking, he was kind of daydreaming a little bit, and he had this vision of himself standing there. And fire begins to break out, and he begins to hurtle over seats, hopping over them. Black smoke fills the room. He drops down, and he's crawling on his hands and knees under the smoke, only to get to the exit door, and fire flames shoot in front of the door. And he looks up, and he sees a sprinkler head that's not working. He takes out his flashlight. He throws it up, hits the sprinkler head. It starts splashing water, kills the fire. He bursts through the exit door, and then he's finally free on the outside. Physique is actually bigger than it was before the story began. Shakes his hair to the side. And he looks at the manager, and he says, "Don't worry about me. I'd get out just fine." Now, you can imagine that the manager was not quite looking for that as a response to that question. And the reason being that the usher's responsibility in a situation like a fire, his job is to stand in the gap between helping get the people, who are the paying customers, from their seats out the door to safety, not for himself to be the action's hero and get himself out the door. And so this was a young man who had failed to understand the concept of standing in the gap. And this morning, this is really what I want to talk about, is what it means to stand in the gap. And so a quick definition for you of what it means to stand in the gap is this: helping someone accomplish what they cannot do on their own. Helping someone accomplish what they cannot do on their own. And what I believe to be true of you and of me who have placed our faith in Jesus Christ is that God has called us to be people who stand in the gap. That we are called to be people who help others accomplish what they cannot do on their own. However, there are some reasons that you and I usually are reserved or fail to be people who stand in the gap. And a couple of reasons, I think, are first one, fear. Okay? Fear that we're going to get burned before. You and I have helped someone, and then it didn't work out very well. Perhaps we loaned them some money, and they never paid us back. Perhaps we helped them out with a situation with family, only for them to start to talk behind our back about us, about how we didn't really actually help them. We've all been in situations where we've done our best to stand in the gap, only for it to turn out to our detriment. So I think after you've been burned once or twice, you get a little gun-shy, a little reserve in wanting to help other people out, willing to stand in the gap. The second reason is that for some of us, we're unqualified. We are currently living in a situation where we are not able to stand in someone else's gap. We need someone to stand in our gap. We're the ones who are in need of help currently. Third, some of us are passive. We're willing to help. We're willing to stand in the gap of somebody else, but we want to be asked. We want to be needed. And so we might even see opportunities, but we're really not going to do anything until someone approaches us. Next, some of us are ignorant. We would love to stand in the gap, but we're just not sure what to do. Like, that sounds like a great idea. I love what Jared's talking about, but what does that even mean? What does that look like? Who would I help? I don't know. And then finally, fifth, it's not even on our radar. It's not even on our radar. What? I should stand in the gap for somebody? I have my own things. I have things that I'm dealing with. And it's a matter of being self-consumed, a matter of being interested only in ourselves. It's just not even on our radar to help other people. We're just focused inward. However, is this really the best response for people who put their faith in Jesus? Is to live out of fear or being unqualified or ignorance or being passive or not even having other people on our radar? I would say not. And the reason why I would say that we ought to not live out of this brokenness, but we ought to be people who stand in the gap, well, in order to answer that question, we have to go to the Scriptures. So would you join me in opening up to the book of Philippians chapter 2? And if you don't have a Bible, there should be a Bible in front of you. And as you open up to Philippians 2, we're going to verse 19. And I believe what we're going to see today in Philippians 2:19 is two examples of men who have stood in the gap. And not only are we going to see two men who have stood in the gap, but we're going to see a plan of what it looks like for you and I to stand in the gap as well. So Philippians 2, verses 19 through 30. Now, for those of you who haven't been with us through the series, is a letter by the Apostle Paul writing to the church of Philippi. And what Paul is trying to communicate is a message of joy, that the Philippians ought to demonstrate joy, and also a message of unity, that they ought to be a congregation who are unified. And in this passage, this is one that usually has two extremes when it comes to the way people approach it when they're interpreting it. One extreme is that people tend to really downplay this whole passage of Scripture and kind of skim over it, seeing not a lot of significance to it because it's such a personal message to the Philippians, as we'll see in a second. The second extreme is that people read way too much into this passage. And so my hope today is that we will strike a balanced view as we seek to interpret this passage. So follow along with me in verse 19. Paul says this: I hope in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy to you soon, so that I too may be cheered by news of you. For I have no one like him who will be genuinely concerned for your welfare. For they all seek their own interests, not those of Jesus Christ. But you know Timothy's proven worth, how as a son with a father he has served with me in the gospel. I hope, therefore, to send him just as soon as I see how it will go with me. And I trust in the Lord that shortly I myself will come also. Now, what Paul's doing here is he's seeking to encourage the Philippians by saying that he's going to send Timothy. Now, what we see here first is in this word hope. Often in the English vernacular, we use the word hope in terms of wishing. There's a certainty when we use the word hope. I hope that works out. But for Paul here, when he uses this word, it is not uncertain. There is great certainty in it, and his certainty derives from the source of his hope, and that is Jesus. So when Paul says, I hope in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy, it is not, maybe Timothy will come. It is, I'm confident that Timothy will come. Now, Timothy, what we know about him is that he was a believer who grew up in a household with a mother and a grandmother who had both put their faith in Jesus, and that he was half Jewish, half Greek, and that his father was the Greek, and so Paul became very much a father figure to him and even circumcised him. and that Timothy has now been on several journeys with Paul, and that when Paul plans to send Timothy to Philippi, this is something that Timothy has been asked to do before. Paul sent him to Thessalonica. Paul sent him to Corinth. He's sort of the apostle liaison for Paul. And so this is Timothy. And then when Paul says that I have no one like him, this phrase like him, it literally means of equal soul. And so the idea is not the uniqueness of Timothy, because as we'll see in a second, Timothy and Epaphroditus are very similar people, very similar in character. What Paul is saying when he says like him is that he has no one in this type of proximity to him, no one as close in relationship to him. Now, when Paul says they all seek their own interest, who is he speaking of? Is he speaking of literally everyone, of every believer? Probably not. For those of you who've been with us, perhaps you remember in chapter 1 when Paul talks about those preachers who preach out of envy and rivalry, the people who oppose Paul. This is most likely who Paul has in mind here, is that those people are the ones who seek their own interest. And then finally, something that we can all take as a lesson here in verse 24, when Paul says, I trust in the Lord that surely I myself will come also. Paul has ascribed to a Jesus-based travel plan. He is trying to count everything that he's going to do entirely up to the Lord and his grace. So that's verses 19 through 24, Timothy. And now as we move into verse 25 and following the end of the chapter, we're going to be introduced to a second character, Epaphroditus. Verse 25, I have thought it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother and fellow worker and fellow soldier, and your messenger and minister to my need. For he has been longing for all of you and has been distressed because you heard that he was ill. Indeed, he was ill, near to death, but God had mercy on him, and not only on him, but also on me, lest I should have sorrow upon sorrow. I am the more eager to send him, therefore, that you may rejoice at seeing him again, and that I may be less anxious. So receive him in the Lord with all joy, and honor such men, for he nearly died for the work of Christ, risking his life to complete what was lacking in your service to me. And so in Paul's second address, what we assume here is that Epaphroditus is the one who's going to be delivering this letter back to the Philippians. And Epaphroditus has come from Philippi. And so what we see here in verse 25 when he says, I thought it necessary, this is a better translation would be urgent. I thought it was urgent. Not just important, but it needs to happen right now that he sends back to him Epaphroditus. Now, outside of this set of verses here, there's nothing else that we really know about Epaphroditus from the scriptures, but there's quite a bit that is revealed about him. It's important to see in verse 26 that when it says that Epaphroditus was distressed, the one other time that this word gets used in the New Testament is to describe Jesus when he's in the Garden of Gethsemane before he was arrested. And so for those of you who aren't familiar, before Jesus was arrested and he was praying with his disciples, he was so emotionally moved that he had tears of blood, that his soul was so troubled by what was about to happen with the arrest and the crucifixion that he was distressed. And so the only other person in the entire New Testament that's described as being in that type of emotional turmoil like Jesus was is this Epaphroditus. That is how disturbed, how concerned he is for the Philippians. Which is quite amazing if you think about it. I mean, how many people in our life would actually, that our concern for them would warrant that strong and of emotional response? Probably very few. And all because we heard he was ill. And we have no idea what his sickness is. I mean, we could speculate all day and that could be exciting. But there's no autopsy report, okay, of what diseases Epaphroditus had in his lifetime. Maybe if Luke would have been with, he could have told us. Luke was a doctor. That's the sense of that. Okay. And finally, in verse 29, risking. Only time this word shows up in the New Testament. And it means exposing to danger or literally to hand over one's life. Epaphroditus' journey to Paul was essentially giving his life over. that despite his disease, he continued to press on his sickness in order to accomplish what it was that the Philippians had tasked him to do. And it says this, to complete what was lacking in your service to me. And now, so just to put it all together, the Philippians have been the single church to consistently support Paul. And so what the Philippians have done is, because they can't all go visit Paul in prison, is that they sent this one guy, Epaphroditus, to deliver a financial gift to Paul. And in the process, he got so sick that he almost died. But it didn't stop him. No, he continued on and he finished the journey. Just to hang out with the guy in prison. Keep in mind that Timothy and Epaphroditus are hanging out with Paul in prison. Okay? Some of you have probably been involved in prison ministry where you go visit a prisoner. But these guys actually got to hang out in the prison. This is a real prison ministry that these two have. And then and finally, Epaphroditus has the opportunity to be sent back to the Philippians. And Paul is hoping that it will cause them joy. Now, some takeaways. What ought we to see from this passage is, one, earlier in chapter 2, Paul describes his desire for the Philippians' relationship with one another. And the way that he describes the relationship is for it to be completely unified. And the example he gives is for them to consider other people's needs above their own. And the perfect example of this is Jesus. And he begins to describe it, how Jesus left heaven, took on human fleshly form, and became a servant, and even became obedient to death. And so the reason why Paul includes this section is not just to give some insider information, but is to show that these two men, Timothy and Epaphroditus, are two men who are two perfect examples of living the Christian life in the way that Jesus has intended us to live. They look like Jesus in the way that they live. And they are men who stand in the gap. Think about it. Timothy is a gap man. Paul cannot go visit Philippi because he's arrested. And so who stands in that gap of Paul's desire to go to Philippi? It's Timothy. He goes. And then Philippians want to bring a gift or send a gift to Timothy or to Paul. But they're not able to all go and travel to the prison. And so who stands in the gap? Epaphroditus. These are two men who stand in the gap and they look like Jesus. And so the first thing that we need to glean from this passage is that we must be motivated to be people who stand in the gap. We must be motivated. And here's the motivation for you and me, is that when we are people who stand in the gap, we are being like Jesus. We are being like Jesus. That is the sole motivation for standing in the gap. It's not to be people who do good deeds. It's not for people who have the benefit of feeling good about ourselves because we help somebody else. It is simply this, that when we stand in the gap, we are being like Jesus. And the verse reference here in Galatians 6:2, I'm going to let you look up on your own because I know you're going to spend all afternoon talking about this message. Post it on Facebook if you look it up. Or Twitter. I won't see it though on Twitter. Now what do we see here? We see that Timothy, it says that he is been serving with Paul like a son to a father in the gospel ministry. Timothy is a gospel-motivated man. And what about Epaphroditus here in verse 25? It says Paul describes him as a fellow worker and fellow soldier. He's not being literal. He's not saying, well, he's chained up building a railroad track or something like we would think of a prisoner doing, or cleaning up garbage on the side of the road, or being a soldier like he's carrying a gun with a bayonet. No, he's not being literal, he's speaking figuratively of the relationship between the two that they have in the gospel. That Epaphroditus is a fellow soldier in gospel ministry. He's a fellow worker in gospel ministry. So these two men, Epaphroditus and Timothy, are motivated by the gospel, as you and I should be as we seek to stand in the gap. Second, which is very, very important, is that these two men are guided. They are guided. They are directed by wise counsel. Epaphroditus and Timothy do not move on their own impulses. Timothy is sent by Paul, Epaphroditus is sent by the Philippian church. They have people who are helping guide and direct their actions. I would be willing to bet that a lot of the time when you and I in the past have stood in the gap for others, we did it on our own impulses, on a whim, without seeking advice or input from others. And those are most likely the situations where it's turned out to our detriment. Now, what's important to see in the fact that it is wise counsel is that Paul is an apostle, but his relationship to Timothy and Epaphroditus is one of family language. He describes Timothy as a son, and he describes Epaphroditus as a brother. Paul is someone who is totally invested in these two men. It is not wise for us to take advice from somebody who has no relationship with us, who has no investment in us. This is part of what makes Paul such a worthy advisor to them. Now, we should be motivated by the gospel to stand in the gap. We ought to be guided. What gap should we stand in? Seek wise counsel to answer that question. How ought we to stand in the gap? How much help do we actually provide wise counsel in order to do that? And then finally, the last component is this, is compassion. That you and I have to be people who are marked by compassion. It is part of the work that the Holy Spirit wants to do in us, is that we would have a concern for one another. Timothy is a man that is genuinely concerned for the Philippians. He's been to Philippi. He was there when the church of Philippi started. And he is genuinely concerned. He is authentic. And then Epaphroditus is so concerned that he is distressed over them. He is longing for the Philippians. Uniquely concerned. People who are compassionate. And this is a question that we have to ask, because as you and I look at problems, and a lot of the times when we look at people, that's what we see. Problems. People are problems. And we don't want to get our hands dirty with them. We don't want to get our hands messy with them. Because if we start down that road, if we start down that journey of standing in the gap of helping somebody, it could be like when you give a mouse a cookie. Who knows when it's going to end? But the Gospels, and particularly Matthew, says that when Jesus saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like a sheep without a shepherd. And so often when we look at people, the question that we have to answer is, what is stirring up inside of me? Is it disgust? Is it disrespect? Or is it compassion? Am I actually concerned for the person that I see? So motivated by the gospel, guided by wise counsel, and then compassionate, concerned for another. Now, as a body, I believe that there are two types of gaps that you and I have to stand in. The first gap is what I call the personal gaps. The personal gaps are the ones that you will do in a relationship, and we may never know about it as a congregation. I may never know what gap you stand in for a person on a personal level. And some examples of these is, and these are all anonymous, but they're all things that I've seen this congregation do, because what I believe to be true is that this is a congregation that stands in the gaps for others. And I believe that I wouldn't be standing in this pulpit right now if it wasn't for the men and women in this congregation who have stood in the gap in my life over the last 13 years. And so I'd say this by way of encouragement and a way of reminder that while this is who we are, okay? And so here's some things I've seen. I've seen people help others with tuition, with no expectation of paying back, a generosity. I've seen people help those with newborns get out of the house or get sleep. I've seen people loan their car out with no expectation of how it would return. I've seen people send others to Israel. I've seen people help a single mother who's working second and third shift with child care. I've seen people help women out of abusive situations, help children out of abusive situations. So I want you to think about this. As you leave here today, that this will be the question running through your mind. What is that personal gap that I need to stand in? Who has God brought in my path that it was not haphazard, but it was the sovereign, providential will of God that I would be able to help them and to serve them by standing in the gap. And then the second type of gap is this, congregational gaps. Is that as a body, as a church, it takes a lot to make this work. It takes a lot for us to minister to families, to minister to individuals, to maintain the facility that God has blessed us with. And so as I think about some of the things that have come up in the last year, one of the things that sets us apart from any other church is that we've always had people stand in the gap of taking care of the facilities and the grounds. And there's a lot of property and there's a lot of building. Every week a light burns out in this building. Every week some kid scuffs a mark up on the wall. Okay, those things happen, and they're good that they happen, because nobody wants to see this building to be empty. Nobody wants to see this building not be used, because we're trying to use it for the glory of God. But it takes us to stand in that gap, to mow the grass and to shovel the snow and to paint the walls. I know that Andy and J.R. Martin have been serving in middle school Sunday school, standing in a gap of so many families for nearly a decade. And they need help because they can't stand in the gap alone. I know that as Andrew continues to seek to provide an excellent worship experience for us each and every Sunday, there are so many components, from greeters to ushers to singers to band members, that he needs help to stand in the gap of helping lead people in worship. And so I just ask, would you consider, what does the Lord have for you in this congregation, to be a part of it, to stand in the gap, to help us minister to the Quad Cities each and every week? So finally, this, a man that I think demonstrates what it looks like to stand in the gap well. His name is John Chrestant, and he was an Orthodox Russian priest in the 19th century. And at that time period, alcoholism and the abuse of alcohol was rampant. It was very extreme. And all of the other priests throughout this very large country saw fit during this time period to stay in their churches. And if there was a drunk or an alcoholic who wanted help, they'd be more than happy to help them if they came into the church doors. But not John. No, John went out of his church. He went into the streets. And as there was literally men laying in the gutter, he would get down on his hands and his knees, and he would pick them up, and he would hold them, and he would look at them and say, this is beneath you, because you were intended to embody the fullness of God. And he would help them up, and he'd help them to sobriety and preach the gospel to them. He was standing in the gap of hundreds of lives every single day. And he was not passive. He did not remain ignorant. He was not afraid of being hurt. And it was totally on his radar, motivated by the gospel, guided by wise counsel, and compassionate. If there ever was a man who was compassionate, it was John. And I hope with certainty that Wildwood will remain a congregation of men and women who are committed to standing in the gap, both personally and as a congregation. Will you pray with me? Father, I pray that today that you would burn our hearts, that there would be an unrelenting desire to minister for your glory on your behalf. And I pray, Father, that you give us eyes to see and ears to hear what it is that you have for us. What gaps are around us that you are calling us to stand in. And I pray, Father, that we would step up in that we would not seek to do it in our own strength or our own ability, but in total surrender and dependence, remembering to keep the first thing first, the glory of Jesus Christ. It's in His name that we pray.